let's make great art. Let's tell great stories that create discussion, that create an opportunity for people that of all faiths, of opportunity for people of no faith, opportunity for everyone to go and see. And maybe just if we do our job right, people of faith will see something in it and people of no faith will see something in it. And I got to tell you, man, in our testings, that's been 10 out of 10 what's happened.
Welcome to the Deconstructionist Podcast. I'm your host, John Williamson, and back this week with a new type of episode. So those of you who have been listening for a while probably remember, you know, over the course of the last 5+ years, you know, we've interviewed musicians and comedians and authors and scholars and all sorts of stuff. But this is the first time I've ever spoken with anybody about a movie. So this was really cool opportunity. And the two guys that came on could not have been cooler and more fun. And I think you hear that in the episode. We really had a great time talking to one another. And the names might sound familiar to some of you out there. So Cliff Young used to be in Cademan's Call back in the 90s and the early 2000s. And Aaron Benward was also a musician, a popular musician within the Christian scene as well. So the two of them came on to talk about a movie that they produced called Playing God. And it's a really cool movie. It's not, and I think we talk about this in the episode as well. It's not like one of those overtly Christian movies, you know, that we all kind of look at and we're like, oh, you know, it's kind of cheesy or whatever. This is a really cool movie, and it's got some great actors in it. I'm a huge fan of Alan Tudyk. Those of you who have seen, anything from Doom Patrol to Knight's Tale back in the day probably remember Alan. He does a lot of voice work as well. And then Michael McKean is in it as well, who, you know, if you've watched any of the Christopher Guest movies or Spinal Tap, you know, specifically, he was in that as well. And then Aaron's son, Luke, is one of the lead characters in the movie, which is really cool. So they come on to talk about the movie. It's, like I said, it's a really interesting movie. It's got a lot of really relatable themes and messages throughout it, primarily one dealing with grief and how we deal with grief and how others kind of expect us to deal with our grief. So it's a really, really interesting and multi-layered film that I highly recommend. Also, the music on this episode is by a really cool band called Black Math. So if you like the music, as always, please reach out and support the band. I will have all the relevant links in the show notes, as always, and I will add that to our Spotify playlist. If you want to support us, the best thing you can do is go to iTunes, leave us a 5-star review, word of mouth, honestly, is the biggest way that we have been able to spread the word about our podcast. So tell your friends if you think it might be helpful. Other than that, if you want to support us, if you go to our website, www.thedeconstructionist.com, has all of our back catalog of episodes, has our blog, has our web store, and it has our link to our Patreon. If you want to support us there, you can do that there. All right. Without further ado, I give you Cliff Young and Aaron Benward. It's towering tall. All right. Welcome to the Deconstructionist Podcast. I haven't done this often, but I'm super thrilled. I have two guests on, so this is like a two for the price of one, even though this podcast is free. But I want to welcome on this week's podcast, Cliff Young, and I've got Aaron Benward, two gentlemen who just created a new film that's out that we'll talk about. But before we get into that, you both have some pretty interesting backgrounds. Didn't start out in film necessarily, so let's start with Cliff. Cliff, talk a little bit about your background. You know, what was your younger years like? You were a musician.
Yes, I was. I traveled around for a long time. Before that, you mean, of course, I was just singing in a little choir in church. So I'm kind of a I'm a little bit of a church rat. growing up. Have you ever heard that term, by the way, church rat?
No.
Hey, yeah, dude. I love church rat.
See? I'm telling you, church rat. Aaron and I are both church rats.
Absolute.
I must have been one too then.
Yeah. And but you know what it means, right? I mean, you get it. I was a church rat. Exactly. You get it immediately. So anyway, sorry, I'm continue with my background here. I was a church rat, since you all know what that means now. And I was a PK, pastor's son. And
PK.
What's that?
Pastor's son would be PS, not a PK.
Pastor's kid.
There you go.
I don't know. Kid. They say PK. Yeah. I don't know.
I'm also a PK.
Okay, whatever.
I get it.
PS, PK, whatever. Anyway.
Yeah, there
Aaron,
you go.
Not your turn.
Okay.
Anyway. But anyway, I started a band with my now wife. In fact, our first date was the night before our first time we ever played. And so we traveled around, a band called Cademan's Call, traveled around, kind of folk rock kind of music. And I don't know if we're at about 20 years. And, I don't know, I guess in a sense we love stories and story and just the idea of telling stories, which you did a lot. And so we, I don't know, it's kind of an easy transition, in a way, into film. So is that what you wanted?
Very elaborate way, though, to get your wife to marry. I mean, starting a band, exactly. I think that's going over and above.
Well, you know what? She's a way, way better musician. She's way better looking. She has a way better voice. So
go ahead and tell him,
Cliff. It was perfect.
Fill him in on the fact that she's actually blind.
that's real
important.
Funny.
That's important. That's yeah.
Funny. Visual, it's important visually detail. Impaired.
Yes.
Anyway.
That's awesome. So Aaron, talk a little bit about your background, because you come from a similar background, right? A musician, starting out in the music industry and then kind of transitioning into film as well.
Yeah, man. So similar. I actually, Cliff and I met when we were 8 years old. I've stayed the closest of friends since then. But the reason why we met is that my dad was a singer. So if his dad was a preacher, my dad was a singer. So I guess I'm an SK, like a Christian music singer, so CMK, Christian music singer kid. I don't know, but he was on staff.
I don't know which one's worse.
I know. I think equally rough. We're all in rehab for it.
Therapy.
But right, that's how we met. And my dad was actually on staff with Cliff's father, and then we moved to Nashville, Tennessee, when I was in high school, and I started singing with my dad. We kind of formed a gospel singing group, if you will, called Aaron Jeffrey. And when Cliff and his band Cademan's Call were singing in colleges at like cool places like Harvard and stuff, I was singing in little, like, you know, 50 member churches in the middle of, you know, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, with my dad.
That's still cool.
It's still, yeah, you know, had some moments. Okay. We actually had some great times. We sang in so many places, but that started me on my musical journey. Then I moved into country music, had a successful group there for a few years. And some music has been both of our past.
What was the name of your band? Country
my
music.
My band was called Blue County. So music being the catalyst for both of us, Cliff and I, to get into this entertainment space is really interesting. And then it was really just about 5 or 6 years ago when Cliff called me and said, "Hey man, we're kind of doing some cool stuff in Houston, some short film kind of stuff. Would you want to come and check it out or see what we're doing?" And, you know, we can get into that story later, but long story short, we decided to form Watershed Motion Pictures, and our first movie, Playing God, is the result of that.
That's outstanding. And you guys have a heck of a cast too. Like Michael McKean, obviously everybody knows him from Spinal Tap and amongst a ton of other things. But the other guy that I think is probably one of the most incredible character actors who deserves more credit than he probably gets, Alan Tudyk.
One of the most underrated actors.
I hope I pronounced that right.
Yeah, it is. One of the most underrated actors, period. Out there. I mean,
I just found Resident Alien.
Oh, yeah.
Have you guys seen that?
Yeah. Well, I've seen some of it. I haven't seen all of it yet.
Amazing.
Oh, he's incredible.
Amazing.
And obviously, you know all the voice acting stuff that he's done. And it's funny. It seems like most people know him originally as the pirate in Dodgeball.
That's right.
You know? And then he's the, well, I remember his character's name. He was in A Knight's Tale. Heath Ledger.
Yep. And that's where I know him from. Yeah. Yeah.
But,
yeah. Amazing guy. So he's popping up a lot more lately. He is, for sure.
He's got some heat on him, as they say.
He does. He does. So talk a little bit about your introduction to the film. So you talked about the fact that you started this production company. Mm-hmm. And so started off, it sounds like, by doing short films. So what led into this project? This is a full-length feature film that's in theaters right now. It's on demand on all the different platforms. So how were you guys approached with doing this project in particular?
Wow.
I think initially, honestly, it was that initial conversation of a friend calling a friend, meaning Cliff calling me. I live in Los Angeles. My wife and kids and I had moved from Nashville out here. He knew that I was adding to kind of the music stuff, getting into producing content, film and TV. And he was just like, hey, man, we kind of been doing it for our youth events here in a way that's like not typical Christian film stuff. Like, it's more of parable and creating discussion and dialogue around them and using them as a means of discussion pieces, and you should check it out. And so it started just as him reaching out for that. And then when I saw what they were doing on literally no money, I asked him, I said, so what's the bigger picture? He said, man, I don't know. So I flew there and I sat there with him and our other two partners that make up Watershed, Scott Brignac, who's the writer director of Plan God, and then Cody Bess, who is responsible for the way our movie looks. Absolutely gorgeous movie, our director of photography, and really one of the main editors of the movie, along with Scott. We just kind of came up with this thing, like, what if we did movies as people of faith, if we did movies that were not faith-based movies? Now, they try to pigeonhole it so they can sell it, right? Like, what is this movie, right? And so I actually turned to Cliff. I'll never forget this. I said, what you did, what Cayman's call was to Christian music, if you will, and my hands are in the air, like putting quotes around it. Let's do that in filmmaking to this space, this genre that is growing in a way that's pioneer something like you did. And so that's kind of what we set out to do, is like, let's make great art. Let's tell great stories that create discussion, that create an opportunity for people that of all faiths, of opportunity for people of no faith, opportunity for everyone to go and see. And maybe just if we do our job right, people of faith will see something in it and people of no faith will see something in it. And I got to tell you, man, in our testings, that's been 10 out of 10 what's happened. And, you know, to the chagrin of our distribution companies going, now, where do we sell this to? Who do we sell this to? We're like, just trust us. Let's get this going. We're trying to pioneer something new. And so it's been a task on that hand, but man, it's been so rewarding on the other hand of what we set out to do.
Yeah.
That's great. That's gotta be frustrating too, as two guys who came from, you know, the quote unquote Christian music industry, because it seems like both musically and from a, you know, film perspective, you know, being kind of pigeonholed into that category kind of limits you to some extent. Like, you're kind of almost preaching to the choir. Whereas,
oh man,
you know, if you're, there are so many other bands who are, you know, quote mainstream, who are able to sing about whatever they want, including kind of Christian topics, who kind of have more of that freedom to reach that much broader audience. Yeah. Like, you too, there's no question,
right? Oh, no doubt
that they've written, you know, like Christian songs, or at least with those themes,
man, no doubt,
but they can write about whatever they want.
Absolutely.
So talk about that a little bit. Talk about the fact that, like, obviously, you know, you just mentioned that it's been a bit of a struggle to try to figure out, like, who do we sell this to, kind of thing. Instead of just saying, just sell it.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, first of all, and I'm not saying, first of all, I don't want you to think I'm just criticizing for the sake of criticizing. But, you know, huge majority of the faith, and I'll call them faith forward films. We try to do that as much as possible because, I mean, honestly, a faith-based film. It's a film that's based in a faith world, and in that worldview is different than a faith-forward film. You know, everything that's, you know, that's, and so I don't know. It seems like maybe they say, "Look, we got a lot of money. We're going to pay you a lot of money. Do this role. Doesn't matter who it is. We're going to do the role," we just decided we're going to put the script out there, and no one had any idea that this is, I mean, it wasn't, I mean, in a, it wasn't relevant, honestly. We just wanted to entertain people and make a good movie. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, it's just, I wish that, you know, so many times, and it's a lot of it's greed, honestly, and a fame hunting, searching perspective. And I know that from believers and not, but just, I want to put out a film. I'm a follower of Jesus, and that's my perspective. That's where I live from. But, you know, I will make a movie about, you know, whatever we make a movie about. And so, it's hard because the struggle, put it this way, the struggle was not because of the faith element. The struggle in this film, honestly, was it's a con movie, it's a drama, it's a comedy. There were some tonal struggles in this film that really wasn't our struggle. But we just put it out there, here's a movie, and that, those are the actors who responded. We didn't have 10 times the money that we should have for this film. They're the ones who responded. It was interesting. And we're finding that it doesn't matter if you're an atheist, agnostic, Hindu, Muslim, Christian, if you're Jewish, it doesn't matter. People were responding to the film, entertainment-wise, and responding just like, hey, why does God allow people to go through this? What's going on? Is there a God? I mean, you know, so that was kind of in our testing. And so we felt great about that.
Also, I think, too, to add to that, of course, I don't know, but I feel like what we got back from, like, a Michael McKean, for instance, when he read the script, he was talking with our director and really said, hey, man, I'm really responding to the material, which actors at that stage, I mean, you got to lead with the material. The material has to grab them. The character has to grab them. You know, it's not like he's looking for work, right? So, and it was at that moment when the material really led the conversation, meaning he had no clue, like Cliff said, of any type of faith bent in our life at all, right, or our worldview. He loved what we were saying, and he loved the take on it. And he also made comment multiple times, whatever the message you're trying to say, as he said, which is multi-layered here, is you're not preaching at anyone. And I really appreciate that. Right. As an actor, and I can
he's brilliant. First of all,
he's brilliant. Yeah.
Michael McKean is brilliant.
Yes,
and I have no idea what he thinks about God. I have no idea. I mean, he is brilliant. His take on it was incredible. He added so much stuff to it, and I should send you. I think you can probably find it somewhere. But the behind the scenes stuff, the interviews and stuff he said about it. I mean, he's brilliant. I mean, you know, I love, first of all, Spinal Tap's one of my favorite movies of all time. And but still, he's brilliant.
But I just rewatched it recently. Oh. You know, still my favorite scene is it goes to 11.
Yeah, one loud.
It's one
kills
loud.
Me every
and
time.
Michael McKean wrote loud. Those songs, dude. He wasn't just in it.
Yeah, he really wrote the majority of the songs. And you know, I guess he didn't win Oscar, but he's a
nominated though.
Oscar nominated for song. Was he nominated for songs in Mighty Wind? You know, he does all the Christopher Guest movies. Surely you know the Christopher Guest movies.
Right. Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And but the guy's incredible musician.
He is. Yeah. Multi-talented guy.
I let him borrow a guitar the whole time so he could sit in his trailer and play the guitar all the time. I didn't bring it with him and play. And of course, he had no idea, but when I got it back, I was like, Michael McKean played this guitar.
I'm never touching this thing again.
David St. Hobbins, yes. Play that.
That's awesome.
But, yeah, no one's touching that guitar again after that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I don't know if he knew what to think of us, you know, but he's from New York.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're from, you know, freaking Tennessee and Texas. And so, you know, he was like, I like the instrument. It was pretty good. It was good. It was an okay instrument. It was good. I'm not used to it. I like Martins. But you know, man,
you're like, I'll get you Martin. Don't worry about it. I'll get you Martin.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's amazing. Well, to kind of dig in a little bit to what you guys were both saying just a second ago. I think one of the things about this film that's so relatable is that you've got these universal themes running throughout. You've got, you know, to kind of not to give anything away, but the Michael McKean role is he's the guy that they enlist. So there's the brother and the sister who are con artists, and they're trying to get Alan Tudyk's character's fortune essentially. And he's this grieving guy. Right. And so they enlist their mentor, Michael McKean's character, to literally play God to try to, you know, give this guy like a fake spiritual experience.
It's a play on words. Playing God, but you can't play God. Do you understand? Just make sure you know. Sorry.
But yeah, so I mean, it's just, it's funny. There's hilarious parts in it. But there are these like very heavy themes throughout. Like there's this guy, Alan Tudyk's character, who is very relatable, not in the sense that I know what it's like to be a millionaire, but you know, or billionaire, whatever. But he's grieving. He's going through this very human experience, and he's just dying for some sort of like God to like, you know, speak to him through something. And he's so desperate that he's kind of almost, despite the fact that he's this smart guy, is willing to kind of suspend reality and assume that this guy really is God.
That's right.
So yeah. Whose idea, you know, was this Scott's idea, you know, who wrote the script? Like who came up with this idea?
Ultimately it was Scott's idea. I think if you read in there, he was talking about, I mean, I went through all of this. We all went through all of this. When he was talking about his daughters, he put his daughters to bed, and she asked him, said, "What if you were going to ask God one question, what would it be?" You know, one of those, you know, kid questions. And he started thinking about it, and it kind of caused him to say, you know, what would that be? And I just think that so many people struggle with why. It doesn't matter what you believe, who God is or wherever, why would you allow evil and suffering and all this different stuff? And what's so crazy, we honestly went into it not realizing, I mean, I guess maybe that was naive to think that, but not realizing, I mean, everyone's thinking that. Well, if there's a God, why, you know, why is he allowing this, that, this, and the other? And, you know, I mean, one of the greatest scenes to me is when they're in a tower, and that it's like, quote, the kind of the Tower of Babel. It's Ben's Tower of Babel, the dad, and he's building this thing. Interestingly enough, Cody, we all have to do a story. Me, Aaron, Cody, Scott, we all sit as a team. We all come up with story stuff. I mean, Aaron may say, "I don't get this. I don't like it. Rewrite it." Scott goes back. He's the pen to paper guy. And so we all contribute, and it's amazing, contribute from our lives and different things. But Cody, I think, is the one who was like, "When I get really stressed, I go through something, and I create. I want to create. I want to do this. I want to take these crazy things." I'm the exact same way. Like when I'm going through a stressful time, when my mom died, was it now, Aaron, 4 years ago, maybe? Three or 4 years ago.
Long, really?
My mom died. Probably, yeah. It had to have been that long, yeah. And so she was the greatest lady in the history of the world. Of course, a lot of people can say that about their moms. And so I started painting. And so I'm not some incredible painting, but it was just therapeutic. And anyway, so Cody brought that up. He needs to be doing something. What's he doing? He's creating something. And Cody was like, he's building something. And if you think about it, the whole time he's trying to find these answers. He's trying to get to God, like, you know, whatever. It's just kind of a little symbolic thing. And at the end, you know, I shouldn't spoil that. But anyway, all that to say, what was the question?
I was just talking about the fact that there's this very relatable theme at the core of it. You know, this guy who is going through an intense amount of grief.
Yeah,
and
so we didn't realize
out for some sign.
You're right. So we didn't realize how many people would relate to it. And I was about to tell a story. So last night I was sitting at this sounds like so like rich, and it's not at all. Okay. If you knew my life, you would realize it's not like that. My car has 200 and almost 40,000 miles on it. Okay. But anyway, I was in this quote country club. It's mostly retired people in our area, way up there north of Houston, sitting by this guy, and he owns a pest control business, and an older guy, probably 75. And he was talking to me, whatever, and I was ordering something to go for the family. And he asked what I did. I told him, I said, it's released a movie. Great. He said, how do you get it? So he emailed me today. It was pretty incredible. He said, your movie was really amazing. He said, today was the 1 year anniversary of my daughter who died.
Oh,
wow.
And he said, I don't know what to say. It was amazing. It helped me understand things. Anyway, all that to say, I can go on. The email was long, but you know, it's just crazy how many people can relate to, what are you doing, God? What's happening? Why, you know? And so, I don't know. It was really cool. It's a cool thing.
Just scorch my feet. I walk alone beside myself. Nowhere to go. This bleeding heart is in my hands. I fell apart.
Oh, man. It reminds me of, there's a good friend of the podcast, this author speaker named Pete Rollins, who does this traveling kind of tour, at least he did for a while, called Pints and Parables, where he has this whole story arc over a series of parables, that some that you know, some borrowed from other traditions, mm-hmm. some that he's written. And he has this one, I'm not even going to try to recreate it, but essentially the gist of the story is this woman has a child who dies, and she's trying to find a way to bring the child back to life. And so at some point she ends up this wise sage in the mountaintop, you know, and he's like, you need to get me these six things or something, and then I can help you. And so she goes out in this kind of like essentially wild goose chase trying to find all these items. But in the process of doing so, she meets all of these different people who have also gone through the same thing. Mm. And in the end, it's not about bringing your son back. You can't bring your son back. Mm. You know, it's about experiencing life with people who have gone before you and gone through the same things.
Yeah.
And that's where her healing journey began.
No doubt.
And she can start to heal then start to properly grieve.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's interesting.
That's
this
crazy.
Film made me think about that. Yeah.
No, I love that. I mean, I think that one thing Aaron, I don't mean to take everything, but
no, you're doing good.
One thing that, anyway, you're an idiot. I mean, honestly, I mean, since we were eight, I just don't even, you don't have anything to say, man. I'm so sorry. No, I'm just kidding. But, but seriously, no, it's crazy you said that, because, with, Caveman's Call, the band I was in those days, that was the one thing when we were good. And I'll say this, we were really good. And I feel like at a certain point, and then at some point, we sold out. When I say sold, I mean, you know, whatever. You can take whatever that means. I don't care. It was like, we want to do this album in India, blah, blah. And the record label said, yeah, if you'll do a worship album, that's the main thing that's going right now. And so we did a worship album. We did another album. Oh, you do another worship album. Okay, we'll do a worship album. So it was funny. We did this bargaining with our record companies a lot. Like, we'll do a worship album if you let us do this. Not that we weren't guilty of just like, come on, what's going on? You know, it's so funny. I was talking to somebody earlier. It was like, we were talking about, we're another movie that we just shot the majority of. So there's a little bit we have left, and it's about a social media, a YouTube influencer, and talking about this character he puts on and the difference between the character he puts on and who he really is, you know? And, so I talked about this today with Scott, cause we were talking about this and going back and forth and having ideas and whatever. And, anyway, the movie's going to be called Chasing Oslo. Can I say that, Aaron? Now,
you
before
did.
finished it. Sorry. Okay. Anyway, he knows all the stuff we can and can't say.
Let me know if I need to. I can.
No, it's okay. Anyway, it's called Chasing Oslo. So we made this character called Oslo Green. He's an influencer. And but we were talking about this character he gets in. And then he's like this cheesy, like, influencer. We're going to do anything. Yes, great. And then truthfully, the guy's lonely. You know, he doesn't know what he's doing. He desires all these, friends and relationships and real stuff. And I was thinking about Caymans. I was talking to Scott. I was like, with Caymans, I feel it's a little bit different. We had this thing, but it was the opposite. So we were probably actually kind of a little bit arrogant. We might have been, we might have been a little bit asshole-ish, if you will, in real life. I mean, we were friends. We're normal people. My point is, we're normal people. And then when we went on stage, we went on interviews, like, we're this humble, we only care about ourselves and we only care about what we're going through. We're just humble. We don't care about the money. But then when we would leave, it'd be like, okay, hey, what's the song? Where's the song on the chart? You know?
Right.
And so that's really the truth. That's the truth of the matter, honestly. But I don't know. Aaron, you weren't like that, though.
Never.
So
we covered a lot of ground in that answer, and I'm not sure where we ended up, but we sure got a lot covered in that one.
Aaron knows that I am not focused as a person.
I think John does too. Okay. Now.
Sorry about that. John, hey, I apologize. You know what? I'm just going to sit here.
You're my people.
Y'all go.
No.
You want to talk about the movie? You guys.
That's good. That was
hey,
good.
You're looking at a guy who wasn't formally diagnosed with ADHD until he was in his late 30s. So
wait a second. Did you get de-diagnosed?
No.
Okay.
No.
Exactly. No. I was diagnosed too. If you got to
really?
Get de-diagnosed, right?
Oh man,
to not have it
you're
anymore.
Cured? Oh yeah.
Right.
Well, there's no ADD anymore. There's only ADHD
oh, really?
In varying degrees on that spectrum.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So
I have
so
all of it.
There are folks who have the hyperactive
yep.
portion of it,
and then
folks who just have the attention deficit yeah. portion of it.
I get you.
Yeah, I found that out recently too.
Okay. I'm with you. You and me, we're here. It's okay.
So I would feel bad if we didn't address the fact that there is another Ben word involved in this film.
Yes. Segue, bud.
How exciting is that? That's got to be a really cool thing to be able to work with family on something like this.
Dude, it is a absolute dream come true. I mean, the Ben you speak of is one of the lead roles of my son, Luke. And, gosh, working with my father was some of the greatest days of my life and some of the hardest days of my life.
What?
Being able to do that. So honestly, it's kind of ingrained in me to want to work with family, I guess, in some respects. Like, it's not all I know. It's, I don't know how to explain it other than it's like Luke started acting when he was 5, a really random thing where he got a Mel Gibson movie. And then that moved into like a huge career for him. My wife was with him the entire time and all that kind of stuff. And now he's 26. But like, we moved to Los Angeles and he had an established acting career, extensive from, being in the most recent film with Melissa McCarthy, Life at the Party, to Dumplin' with Jennifer Aniston, to before that, Channing Tatum and Dear John, and before that, all the, like, 4 Disney Channel movies, and How to Eat Fried Worms when he was, like, 10, and Because of Winn Dixie when he was, like, 11. I mean, I may be wrong on the ages, but...
Hey, what happened? I'm being real honest. What happened in the Nicolas Cage movie?
It's out. It's on Hulu. Yeah.
It is?
Grand
I've
Isle.
Never seen it.
Ooh.
Yeah, Grand Isle. Yeah.
Kind of isn't he like kind of opposite Nicolas Cage in that?
Yeah, you see my son's butt in the movies, which is weird, but.
Oh, really?
Weird butt,
I hope it's better than yours.
Yeah. Hey, it's genetic. What are you talking about? Butt cheeks are genetic.
What? Oh, yeah, whatever. Then it's
like
not your good.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. Sorry, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Anyway, so.
Much of zits.
So when we.
Anyway.
Oh, that's amazing. Hey.
Wait, I didn't
say that.
We got
to stop and acknowledge that he was in a movie with Nicolas Cage, which might be more impressive than Mel Gibson.
Are you kidding?
Come on.
Yeah.
The guy's a national treasure.
Right.
See what I did there?
Raising Arizona.
Go ahead, Aaron. I'm sorry.
I'm here for the dad jokes.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. So anyway, so when we started throwing around playing God, you know, I always thought about and dreamed of working with my kid. He's one of the greatest in his age group, and it's not like a handout. You know, it's like, hey, dad's hiring this kid. It's like the kid is like, well, maybe dad, I'll do your movie. You know what I mean? It's like the other way around. And so,
so true, yeah, too.
And so when we got to that point, you know, we actually went through the casting process. It wasn't just a tip. Oh, Aaron's son Luke's going to play this role, even though it was perfect for him, whatever. It went through a whole series with Scott, the director, going through like all the different potential actors for the role. And going through it all, actually, it came down. And I said to Scott, I said, hey, look, this is my kid. I think he's the best. But ultimately, you're the director, and I want to support your vision as your producer. And so I want this to be the guy you want for the role. And so Scott went through an extensive kind of search on that role and literally came back to the fact, and hey, there's no doubt that Luke is Micah and da 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 da. So, and then to work with him and be on set with him was amazing. And then to add to that, which is not in the headlines, is that my daughter, Gracie, she's 24, she's 2 years younger than Luke, was our script supervisor. And this is now she's gone on to do many, many movies, but her first movie to be script supervisor right along Scott, where they sit right next to the director and basically are everything the director says and does, they write down and they make sure that every shot is covered. They make sure that all the continuity.
It's no joke role.
It's a major, like, you know, thinking all the time.
They could have done without me, not her. Not
Cliff, as you can tell, detail, very attention to detail Cliff is. So he was good. All the time. But yeah, man, to have my kids there, and it was just a dream come true, bro. And I think that, you know, I think both, I don't want to speak for them, but I think both of them go, when is our next movie? I think they enjoyed themselves that much. And for me, I really, because of my experience of working with my father and understand the dynamic, I think I really wanted to make sure that it was a very collaborative process. It wasn't, well, dad says this, so dad, it's got to be that way.
No, you did a really good job.
Yeah, thanks, man.
You really did. Yeah.
And so
if you don't know this, John, we all live in response to how we were brought up.
That's true.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
You did a great job.
Man, that's the first compliment you've given me in like, well, since we were 9, I think.
Oh, shut up. It's not true. Anyway.
No, that's absolutely amazing. And by the way, people can't see what I can see your faces. They can't. Mm-hmm. Aaron, you clearly don't look old enough to have 20-something-year-old kids.
Okay. Whoa, what about me?
Clip what?
Well, I mean,
is it, you know. Does this bother you?
Does that
make it worse if you should?
Cliff just pulled his hat off.
Hey, here's the deal, which I don't do very much.
Dude, I see the lights from John, in your forehead right now.
John, you're drawing me in. He's drawing me in. He's tricking me. I feel it.
Yeah. See?
We're the exact same age, by the way.
We are. Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
Are you really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, shut up.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway. But
I didn't mean that as an assault.
Oh, yes, you did. It's okay.
Aaron's got a baby face, though. He's got a baby face.
No, he does. He does. But he has that. Yeah.
It's all the Nodzima I use at night, man. That's what it is.
Dude, I haven't washed my face years.
I usually keep a beard like Cliff does, but my daughter the other day, like a few days before my birthday, she's like, "Daddy, you got a lot of white hair in your beard." I was like, "All right."
You know what's funny?
All right.
No, my wife of now almost 25 years, she does snort. Anyway, she likes the gray. No, she likes the gray.
She does.
Yeah, see?
I'm telling you, she doesn't want it.
It's
like
the wisdom.
We actually looked for a product that would make the dark, because I had this weird dark mustache and it stops here. Now it was here, which is great. It's getting better. But do I can make that the same color as this? Doesn't exist. You can't find it.
You can't make your dark mustache that gray?
No.
To match your
cannot
beard?
Do it. If you find it, I'll be nice to you.
Interesting.
For a couple of months. I'm serious.
There's a legendary man who had that exact same look, though. If you remember, in the later stages, well, probably still now, nobody's seen him in forever, but Sean Connery. Connery had that look. He had the
look.
Yeah.
Yes. Did you give yourself to him? Yeah. I get it. I get it.
Oh, yeah. Man. Well, before we go, what else would you guys like to say about the film? Like, what's ultimately, you know, what is the takeaway that you hope people have from going out to see this?
That Aaron? They are entertained, man. First, like, you know, the movies are made for us to escape for a little bit and allow us to connect with character and story and arc and whatever way we can. And I think in this movie, it's a con movie at the core. It's like, it's a fun twist and turns out of the blue. Things come that you don't see coming. The end of the film is like a major, like, what kind of thing. So all the elements of, you know, that kind of film going experience, I hope we achieved. And I think we at least checked those boxes. And ultimately I feel like for me, it's like, wherever you are in your life and whatever stage you might be in and a season you might be in or, you know, lens you might be looking through, that you can walk away with something to be able to discuss. It could be as simple as, wait a second, when he said and did that, he meant that, or when they, simple as that, or as, wow, the moment where Alan Tudyk and Michael McKean are talking about grief, man, that was really something I never thought of. And to create dialogue around it, man, and ultimately to walk away and go, man, that was a really good movie. And I don't want to speak for, I will speak for Cliff because he's told it to me. This is our first movie. This is our very first feature film. We've done it, which is hard to do first of all, which we need to kind of say good job to each other. Hey, good job, Cliff. You did it.
Yeah, that's great.
And the other thing is that not only did we do it, but we did it in a way where I think it's, I'm proud of it, you know? And now that's garnered us the opportunity to make a second movie, and we have a TV show we just sold to Peacock, and there's just the thing has grown now. Our company has really got footing and a direction where it feels like, man, we're actually doing it, you know? And so, thankful for it, and thankful to do it with one of my closest friends on the planet that you're listening to, who rambles and doesn't give me compliments and has a bald head. But
I just said you did a good job.
And other than that, man, now we did it, and it's fun to do it with brothers and guys that you love and guys you go to war with, because making a movie is not easy. We've been working on this for 4 years.
Wow.
So. Right. Yeah. It's true. What was the question?
I was gonna say what I love about it. Maybe Cliff, you can comment on this. Is just the fact that I think as a society we have this bad habit of anyone who's going through grief, mm-hmm. kind of rushing them along before they've had their time to really sit in it and properly grieve. We're just kind of like, our attitude is always like, aren't you done being sad? You know, like,
yeah,
what's the deal? And everybody's pace is slightly different depending on what's going on in their life or what that traumatic event was, you know, and especially now. Yeah. I mean, we were talking before we started recording about everything going on with COVID and the number of deaths we see around us. And so there are a lot of people, there's a lot of suffering going on around the world right now. And if anything, it's a great look at, you know, how we could be a little better, I think, to the people around us, especially going through a hard time like that.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, I mean, we did, we do want to just entertain people, ultimately. We hope it's a good movie. It's not perfect. As my late Uncle Blake would say, it's not perfect from Mississippi. But I don't know, I mean, I'm not trying to be like over. I mean, I'm so done being like over serious about art. You know, I'm sorry. I'm just not over, you know, but it is, it's an important, I'm not going to say it's an important film, but what we're discussing is important, you know, and what the film is about is important. And, you know, as far as dealing with grief and the real questions, honestly, there's a scene where he's talking about what's the artist that did it, the pointillism, Day in the Park or whatever it's called. It's
French guy.
Whatever it is, whatever it's his name. Are you familiar? Seurat. His name.
Seurat.
And he's a pointillist. So all the dots, you know. And he talks about, so Ben's questioning. And so why this happened to his daughter, why his daughter died. And he basically just said, well, if you're looking really close, like at a Seurat, pointillism, you can't tell. It's just a bunch of crap just smeared on a page. And if you back up, you see this perspective. And I think that's really important. There's no doubt the divine perspective, there's no way to understand, and we try to and we can't. However, what's interesting about this movie is it's honest enough to where the response from Ben, Alan Tudyk, is like, oh, spare me the whole perspective, you know, whatever, you know? Yeah. And yeah. So even though he made a pretty good point, Michael McKean did as God, we still allow it to go, oh, whatever, perspective, come on. You know, my daughter died in my arms.
I think that's so
and
good.
So that's important, the honesty and just real, how we all feel it. If you, I mean, look, I know Aaron has, I know I have, I know one of my mentors, my brother, who's a pastor and an author, has, and he has a book that's called No Doubt, like K-N-O-W, doubt. And we've all questioned all these things and doubted these different things, and we deal with this, but we just, I don't know, we don't want to express it and show it, you know? And I think most people would probably say, we'll just leave it at that whole, you know, Seurat, you know, painting perspective. It's great. But then the truth of the matter is, he's like, what? You're asking me perspective? You know, my daughter died, you know? And that's important to talk about.
Yeah,
in fact,
I think
it's essential to talk about.
I think to add to that is like, you know, obviously in those moments, it's important. And I can only speak for myself. So I don't want to speak for anybody but me in this. The name of your podcast is important. For me and in my life, I had to take away and strip away things. I had to ask questions. I had to enter into doubt. I had to enter into the situations of the realness of my situation and what I was facing and what I was going through in order to see, not just know in my mind, not just have been taught, not just do what I was told to do, but truly experience Jesus in moments where I allowed him to. And I think so oftentimes we don't allow him the space to do what he so desires to do because of, you know, how we were raised, because of the situations that we were taught we had to do, whatever. Well, all we can go, there's a litany of them. But my point is, to Cliff's point, man, the honesty of this movie is, and what we want to do as a company, to be quite frank, of the stuff we want to do, what you won't get from us, and I can promise this, and we're you know, August 11th, and we're in 2021. What you won't find with Watershed, and if you do, you can call me out on it in however many years from now, is just candy-coated, placating messages to a certain audience in order to make a buck and in order to make them feel good and in order to just continue them on a journey of the same thing they're getting. What you will get from us is, like we do in Playing God, honesty, as honest as we could be, quite frank, on topics that are very mysterious, on topics where there is no real answer until we die. Nobody knows until we die. And in those moments, to be able to be as raw and honest and vulnerable as we can be, so that we all can discover and we all can and experience, hopefully, Christ in those moments, because we feel that is the ultimate love. That is the ultimate place of restoration, of reconciliation, of redemption, of hope, of love, of freedom. That's what our ultimate hope is. And that people find it through an experience and a confrontation with the person of Christ through what we do by creating the most honest stories possible.
Okay, so can I be really real and honest, Aaron?
Uh-oh. This is usually a setup for some kind of BS he's going to tell me. What?
No. It's real. 10 years ago, you would have heard that from Aaron. Am I right?
Yeah.
What you just said. A year and a half or 2 years ago, you wouldn't have.
That's true, man. No, it's important to say.
No, my point is, dude, we're all going through it.
Yeah.
We all are doubting and not understanding and not whatever. I'm just saying. I'm.
Yeah.
You know. John can edit that out if you want. You can talk to him later.
I kind of mentor a group of young actors out here in Hollywood on Wednesday mornings. This morning. And we were talking about, well, just kind of a safe place for them to just literally talk about whatever they want. They're all different. It's not a Christian thing. It's just come together and love and encourage each other. Really, we call ourselves the Disruptors. We want to be men of integrity and character in a business that doesn't have it. It's kind of our through line. We're talking about, like, I said, I'm a career Christian.
Hashtag Disruptors.
So it's like I was talked about this whole thing of like living out what is faith, that kind of thing. And I was talking about, you know, a career Christian kind of. So I go, what do you mean? I go, well, you know, 5 years old, I kind of, you know, learned about God and thought that I needed him. I said, but I didn't really know what that meant. Like, I didn't really know what it meant. That doesn't mean my eternity wasn't secure. That doesn't mean I don't believe that my eternity was secure. What I don't know I meant is I didn't know what his message was. I didn't know what Jesus afforded me, truly. I could chapter and verse, went to Christian school my whole life. Dude, as far as anybody could quote it, I could quote it. But it wasn't until what I just mentioned to you about a year and a half ago where I literally said to Jesus, said, if you give what you say you give.
She almost cursed.
I am. No. If you give what you say you give, then I'm done getting what I'm getting, which is unrest, searching for serenity, desiring for more peace. And I said, so, hey, guess what? I surrender. And it almost put him on. It was an invitation in to allow him to do what he wanted to do, you know, but it was also a way for him to prove his love, not that he had to, but because he wanted to. There you go.
Love it, man.
Hashtag prove his love. That didn't really happen.
No, I love what you're saying, because after doing this podcast for 5+, almost 6 years now, and having conversations with tons of different people, there's this thread, man. There's this theme that's undeniable, and the theme seems to be less of this desire for answers, mm-hmm. but really more so like the freedom to ask questions, mm-hmm. and the freedom to explore, and the authenticity that comes with the fact that we're all kind of standing around really at our core asking the same questions and saying, I don't know, man, I don't know. And like, I think most people at this point, I don't need another answer man standing in front of me telling me they've got it all figured out, because I'm going to call bullshit on that every time. No, you don't, you know, but if somebody stands in front of me and says, you know what, man, I don't know. I don't know either. And that kills me too. And I'm going through the same thing. There's freedom in that, you know, it's like my therapist said to me one time,
completely different related topic. Therapist?
Oh, I do. I do. That poor guy.
his name is Mr. Daniels, Jack Daniels.
That's right. And he doesn't get paid nearly enough. Aaron,
okay.
Jack's a good guy.
Yeah.
No, but like he was talking to me about something else, and it was about anxiety and like the root of anxiety. And he said, you know where your anxiety stems from, right? And I was like, where, you know? And he's like, trying to control things outside of your control. Mm-hmm. As soon as you stop doing that, your anxiety is going to go away. And I think there's this anxiety that we as Christians, or, you know, if you want to label yourself as a Christian, you know, or not, but there's this anxiety that we have come to feel and live in, you know, and once you can say, you know, we don't have all the answers, and that's okay. Right. Let God be as big as God is.
Yeah. That's right.
Stop trying to squeeze him into this little box.
That's right.
Stop it. Yeah. And stop trying to pretend like we got it all figured
out. Right.
And that anxiety kind of goes away, right?
That's right. And what's interesting too, I was thinking about this earlier, and I, of course, forgot that I was going to say this. you know, when it comes to Christian films, again, I'm not knocking anyone. I know those people is they're very clean. They're very safe. When it comes to Christian music,
mm-hmm.
You can just tell it when you hear it most of the time. There's very little mistakes. There's very little passion. There's very few mistakes. They're more auto-tuned than Disney has ever thought about auto-tuning. But that
that's
right
probably
there.
True.
But you know what's interesting? That will tell you something about the state of Christendom.
Mm. Yeah.
Does that make sense? We
yeah,
totally.
We don't, you know, we want to be, we're clean. We got to figure it out. We got it. We don't hit bad notes. Are you kidding me? You know? And so there's very little passion in it. And, you know, we were talking about Bono the other day, you know, just a second ago about you too. I mean, dude, Bono's flat, sharp, whatever, man. He's just passion all day long. You look at like,
yeah,
I mean, like back him with like, Live Aid and all that stuff that he did, and Farm Aid, and then early with Unforgettable Fire. I mean, talking about passion, you don't hear yeah. that a lot. And I'm not saying they don't feel it, but the people that are putting the music out are afraid to let people hear it, to let people know yeah. the truth. And that's just a reflection of our hearts. And that's a reflection of who we are. And it's really sad.
And I think to your point, I think we tend to put those types of people up on pedestals and,
yeah,
and
yes.
put it on in such a way that it's unsustainable. Like nobody can live up to that, you know? And so and we act so surprised when a megachurch pastor loses his mind,
yeah.
you know, and we're like, there's no way that guy could have
That's
continued
right.
on living that type of life
That's
and
right.
not cracked.
That's right.
Like, there's just no way. But if you're outside the Christian bubble, you're allowed to be flawed
That's right.
and human
That's right.
and all of those things that come along with being human, but not, you're right. Not within this Christian bubble,
That's right.
this very bubble wrapped kind of existence that we've created.
That's true.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Oh man. We just went deep, guys.
We did.
You know what? Honestly, I don't think Aaron did. I think Aaron was like this. I don't think he went deep. I mean, you'd like to think that he did. I don't think he did, you know?
We'll put up a joke.
I love going deep.
I have a joking look on my face, everyone. It's not a video podcast.
You can see the love between these two. Yeah. You guys can't see it, but I can. I can.
No, he's an idiot, honestly. But it's cool. It's good.
Well, tell folks where can they stay up on top of what you guys are up to, but also where can they go to see this film?
Oh, that's Aaron. That's Aaron.
Yeah, Cliff, back up. Go back.
Yeah, I'm backing up. Sorry.
Get away from the mic. Awesome. Appreciate that.
My bad. Hey, just look up
movies, I think. Google movies, and then I think it might be there if you Google movies.
That's M-O-O.
Wherever the movies are.
Yeah, no, it's anywhere you buy your movies, whether it's Apple, Amazon, you know, on demand, your cable provider, your satellite provider, whatever. And it's a limited theatrical release, so in some markets you got to kind of look and see if it's in your market or not. But everybody's pretty much going on to their, which now it's everybody's doing, watching it at home. And so we encourage people to do that. We Watershed Motion Pictures, at Watershed Motion Pictures is our Instagram. And we're posting stuff up there all the time and about the movie, as well as our next one, Chasing Ozzo, that should probably be out next year. Really excited about, and then other projects we're doing, like I mentioned earlier. So, man, we just, you know, honestly, as far as what you and other of your colleagues, like you mentioned earlier, Rollins and others like him in your space from the podcast world, we're a similar thing in the film space, man. Where we're trying to just really allow people a space and create moments and art that, gosh, doesn't, like you said, Cliff, have tuners on them and doesn't have, you know, Photoshop and everything we do, but actually being as real and authentic as we can be in our journey personally, that then conveys through our art that allows people in their journey to be able to connect to in their way. So, so watershedmotionpictures.com is also our domain. You can learn more about us, our bios. You can see a picture of Cliff and his bald head, I think, on that as well.
Whoa.
No, I'm wearing a hat.
Oh, you're wearing a hat. Okay.
You didn't get that vulnerable on the
No, I can't do that. I can't get that vulnerable.
Did you color your beard on our website?
No.
Oh, it's still great. Okay.
Good.
I wouldn't
do
that. All right.
Authenticity there.
You know, today's my dad's birthday.
Oh, it is.
He's 85.
Wow.
And yeah, I'm 48 and I'll be 49 this month as well.
Next week, I think.
So, Leo?
No. I don't know. What is that? I have no freaking
idea. Did you miss the cutoff for Leo? I don't even know what that means.
I don't think I'm a Leo.
People are like, are you a Leo? I'm like, yeah, I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I don't remember. Someone told my daughter, you know, she's on TikTok all the time. She knows all of that stuff.
There you go. Mine was yesterday. I just turned 42. So
42.
Now when they still card me, I can say I'm actually twice the age I should be to drink. But thank you. I appreciate the compliment.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So, well, guys, this was super fun. Come back anytime.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Let me know when you guys, the next film is out, and we'll talk all about it.
I can go toe to toe. I'm ready.
I love it.
All right.
Thank you, dude.
Thanks, Sean. All right. Zip tied in my lonely heart. Got a new release on a dark room. Developing pictures, and it feels too soon. I can't help it. Lean in, trust falling to a concrete floor. But I can't say anything. Oh, cell phone, came to my palm. Cliff hanging on your painted nails. Oh, finger on, head sharp, gotta watch myself. This is my new game. Look out a window, glass breaks when I blink in slow motion. Some raindrops splitting off, 10 paths on a race to the bottom. And I got some fear on my tongue. Give me a reason to empty the poison in my lungs and aim it right through my thumbs. Yeah. This is my new game. Oh, cell phone taped to my palm, cliff hanging on your painted nails. Oh, finger on, head shot, and I watch myself. Never stop my song. Yeah, this is my new game. Oh, yeah. This is my new game. Can't help
this episode sponsored by Forkful. Most meal delivery services promise healthy food, but look closer, and you'll often find cheap industrial seed oils hiding in the ingredients. Forkful does things differently. Forkful delivers chef-prepared meals made with premium ingredients you'd expect at a great restaurant, from center-cut filet mignon to wild-caught lobster mac and cheese. And every meal is 100% seed oil-free. Instead of canola or soybean oil, Forkful chefs cook with extra virgin olive oil, avocado oil, and grass-fed butter. Because better fats make better food. Meals arrive fresh, never frozen, with clear nutrition and ingredient transparency, so you always know exactly what you're eating. Restaurant-quality meals, real ingredients, no seed oils. Discover Forkful today at ForkfulMeals.com.